Hey everybody, it's Amanda. Welcome or welcome back to the Park Ridge Presby Podcast, the message podcast of Park Ridge Presbyterian Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. We would love for you to experience a Sunday morning with us, or you can always connect with us on social media. We are Park Ridge Presby on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We hope this message inspires your faith to make a difference for you every day. Our scripture reading today comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 22, verses 19 through 23. And he took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And likewise the cup after he had eaten, saying, "This cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood. But behold, the hand of him who betrays me is with me on the table. For the Son of Man goes as it has been determined, but woe to the man to whom he is betrayed." And they began to question one another which of them it could be and who was going to do this. So we're front yard people. Me, my family, we're front yard people. Terry got me these awesome blue Adirondack chairs, and they're out in our front yard. And we even have this blue little baby swing in the tree in our front yard for Riley. And we're front yard people now. And being front yard people has radically changed how we relate to our block and what it means to be a neighbor. We have conversations with people that we would never have conversations with. Middle-aged moms raising their high school kids ready to go off to college. Older people that live down the street who stop to say hi to Riley in the swing. We are different kinds of neighbors now because we are front yard people. Whether it's pushing Riley in that swing or sitting out to have a drink after she goes to bed, there's an openness, an opportunity that we have now to be neighbors, to connect to other people when we're out there like that. And not when we're just rushing in and out of the house on the go everywhere. I know some of you are front yard people too. Maybe you have awesome front porches or front yard swings. Maybe you live on a block where there's a lot of kids and the neighborhood kids just run from front yard to front yard. And so you know about the magic of the front yard. It's actually this exact feeling that I have about our front yard chairs that got me so excited about those picnic tables on the front yard of the church by our main lounge doors. Over the summer, there was a youth mission trip here at the church. They did a lot of different projects, and one of the things that they built was those picnic tables out there. And I just kept dreaming about what would it look like if our church, if we were front yard people too. What would it mean for our block? What would it mean for our neighbors? What would it mean for the parents that drop their kids off at the school here? I just got really excited and really inspired, and I think a lot about what does it mean to be a front yard church. I think a lot about the hands that made those tables. So it was a youth mission trip, right? So there were teenagers here, and it was a group of some middle school and high school girls, all from different schools and different backgrounds, and a couple adult volunteers. And I know that those people would not all be at the same table if they had the choice. But here they were using their hands to build this table for our church, for our community. I think about the sticky ice cream hands of those Christie's Carousel students that got to sit out there this summer when we first put the picnic tables out there. And I think about the moms that sat at that table, laying out all over the table their hopes and their fears and their prayers for their kids when we had mom's night. But I also think about kind of those unplanned, unphoto-worthy moments that might happen at the table too. I wonder if somebody is going to come along those picnic tables and they're just going to be so glad and that those tables were ready for them right when they needed to take a rest. You know, gathering people together around tables is something that Christians have been doing since the early church. As preacher Fred Craddock puts it in this commentary that he wrote on the Gospel of Luke, it's almost as though, because of the Last Supper, no meal among disciples is just a meal, because no loaf is just bread and no cup is just wine. There is communion. There's a sense of fellowship. We find God and one another when we are gathered around the same table. Today's World Communion Sunday, a day where our church and many churches around the world give special attention and special celebration to the Lord's Supper, to communion. World Communion Sunday, as I learned, was actually started by a Presbyterian pastor. It was a Presbyterian pastor in Pittsburgh in 1933. His name was Dr. Hugh Thomas Kerr. And originally it was called Worldwide Communion Sunday. And first it was just kind of a Presbyterian thing. It became official in 1936, where it was a Presbyterian thing. And then other denominations were invited to be a part of it. Then I learned that it wasn't until 1940, where it kind of became adopted and promoted by a lot of different churches here and around the world. You want to know why? So this pastor, Dr. Kerr, he had a son who became a pastor too, and he was interviewed once about this Worldwide Communion Sunday that came out of his father's ministry. And he was asked what got this all started? Why did World Communion Sunday become a thing? And he said the concept spread very slowly at first. People did not give a whole lot of thought about it, but it was during the Second World War that the spirit behind Worldwide Communion Sunday, caught hold. Because we were trying to hold the world together. Worldwide Communion symbolized the effort to hold things together in a spiritual way. It emphasized that we are one in the Spirit and in the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what Dr. Kerr's son said about this movement that grew out of his father's ministry. It was during the Second World War that they felt like the world needed this, that they were holding the world together. The world needed to be invited to come back to the table and be reminded that there is one who is greater than all that divides us, one that does hold us together. I wonder if there's ever been a time in our world where we needed an invitation back to the table more than now. One of the things that has been so complicated about this season that we're in, and you know and I know, we have all experienced this far too much, it's been hard to gather people together to have their hands on the same table. It's been hard. And it's hard for us personally, it's hard for us socially in our own little worlds, but I think there's been this challenge in how we're connected to one another, bigger than that, bigger than the people that you know personally. We're just disconnected, and it's been complicated. It's been way too easy, hasn't it, to write off whole groups of people, whole political parties, whole regions of the country, based on these snippets that we hear about them and these perceptions that we might make about them, whoever that them is out there, based on stories on the news or whatever's gone viral on social media. It's that echo chamber effect that we talk about sometimes, where there's so much us-ing and them-ing, and it keeps us so divided. One of my favorite authors, Brené Brown, she's a researcher and podcaster and shame researcher and speaker. She likes to say that it's hard to hate people close up. And I really believe that. I really do. I think that there's great power in empathy and staying curious about other people. And I think that that's part of what happens when we gather at the table the way that Jesus invites us to. In the Gospels, we find Jesus commanding the disciples to break bread and share the cup in remembrance of him. This all takes place over the Passover meal. That will be Jesus' last meal with the disciples. Jesus will be betrayed, he'll be arrested, he'll be put on trial like a criminal, and he'll die a criminal's death on the cross. All four of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they spend significant time detailing these last events in Jesus' life before the resurrection. But it's in this section of the Passover that we've come to call the Last Supper. Matthew and Mark's account of these events, they mention Judas by name. Judas is that disciple who would turn Jesus over. They mention Judas in the beginning of these events, before the bread was broken and the cup was shared. And so you might wonder, Judas, knowing that he's already made plans to betray Jesus, you wonder, does he really stick around for that meal? Does he really stick around for that Passover celebration? But in Luke's gospel, Judas is mentioned after Jesus has taken that bread and broken it and poured out the cup, saying this is a sign of the new covenant. And he's told the disciples to share it and share in this new covenant. In Luke's account, there's no question of Judas's participation in the meal and participation in God's covenant community. In Luke 22:21, it says, "But see, the one who betrays me is with me, and his hand is on the table." Jesus' hands were on the table with the one who betrayed him. And still the bread was broken for him, and the cup was shared for him. Forgiveness, as we see throughout Luke's gospel, over and over again, is extended to the people that we would say don't deserve it. Forgiveness is for the prodigal son and the tax collector and the betrayer. Jesus gives the church this commandment to break bread and share the cup so that we would be reminded that God's forgiveness is for us and for everyone else. Even the people that we think might not deserve it, even the people that have offended us or disgraced us or betrayed us or hurt us, even those people have their hands on the table too. And Jesus breaks bread and says, "This is my body broken for you, and this cup is poured out in my blood for you." So when you think about it like that, it makes sense that worldwide Communion Sunday would be a way to hold the world together in a time that feels hopeless. We believe that God meets us at the table in a holy and mysterious way. We believe that it is in the remembering that we're changed. That in the gathering and the receiving and the being sent out, that we're living into this new covenant life that Jesus invites us into. So maybe it can change the world after all. Maybe it already has. I think what that preaching professor Fred Craddock said is true. It's almost as though because of the Last Supper, no meal among disciples is just a meal. Because no loaf is just bread and no cup is just wine. And if that's true, then what you do around your kitchen table or your front porch or your church picnic tables or your front yard blue chairs, whatever you do in this ordinary way is actually an extraordinary opportunity to meet people the way Jesus meets people and serve people the way that Jesus serves people. So everyone's homework from church today, while the weather is still nice, is to go outside and gather people together. It doesn't have to be fancy or complicated. It doesn't even have to be that planned. But I'm inviting you to be a part of this holy and mysterious thing that God does when we gather together and lay our hands on the same table. And I don't want you to miss out on that. Hey, thanks again for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can subscribe to this podcast or find us on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. We are at Park Ridge Presby on all platforms.